The episode that I would like to focus on in the Parsha of Chayesara is really the center, shall we say, the center of the Parsha, the finding of a wife for Yitzchak. And there's quite a bit to say from many points of view, and actually the first segment of our discussion is a matter of Parshanut. For this really occupies all of Perek Kaf Dalet, and it's a long Perek, almost 70 psukim. And how does the Perek begin? Va'Avraham Zaken, Ba'Bayamim, Avraham was elderly, coming in days, Vashem Berachas Avraham Bakol, Hashem blessed Avraham with everything. That's a rather open-ended statement. Define everything. Well, as we will see, the Gemara does. In fact, the Gemara states, or one opinion at least in the Gemara, is that this indicates to us that Avram had a daughter as well. We don't hear that much from her in the Chumash. We don't necessarily so much know what happened with her, but she was there. So there you go. If you have a daughter, you have everything. Actually, the Medrash says that her name was Bakol. Hashem Berachas Avram Bakol. It's a very interesting place for us to be told that Avraham had a daughter, not when she was born, presumably. She wasn't born at that time. It kind of comes in here. And who does he speak to? Vayomer Avraham el avdo zekan beso, to his servant, the elder of his household, Hamoshel b'chol ha-shalo, who's in charge of basically everything, runs the house, the household. Simno yadcha tachas yirechi, so he wants to... him to find a wife for Yitzchak. Now, it's interesting that actually we've received now information about everyone, seemingly apart from Yitzchak himself. The parsha of finding a wife for Yitzchak begins by telling us that Avram was old. One may have thought that it would be more relevant to tell us whether Yitzchak was getting older. And then maybe that's the prelude to finding a wife. So how do these psukim form the launch, shall we say, for the parsha of finding a wife for Yitzchak? So firstly, and this will be guided, this is the opening part, by the Alshich HaKadosh, of course, it always keeps an eye on every detail, that there's a basic question that one may ask, and we never ask it, we perhaps overlook it. Yitzchak needs to get married. Avram is also not married. Sarah has passed away at the beginning of the Parsha. As far as we know, there is a principle that if ever someone is in need of something, and let's say his son is also in need of something, but the person's own needs take precedence. So it's interesting that Avram, and in the fullness of time, Avram will get married again. He'll marry Keturah in the end of the Parsha, which Chazal says is Hagar. But why does he take care of Yitzchak before he takes care of himself? It's an interesting shaila. And it needs to be dealt with before we continue. And the Alshich says, the reason is in Pasuk Aleph, because why does a person need to get married? Why is it important for him to be married? If you find somebody who wants to marry, so that's reason enough. But why would he look for someone to marry? It's either to fulfill the mitzvah of Pru Ravu, to populate the world, to have children, or perhaps he, for physical reasons, he feels that he would need to get married. Well, that's why the Pasuk tells us about Avram in Pasuk Aleph, because it's explaining why Avram did not see his own marriage as a priority, but rather gave precedence to Yitzchak. With reference to the mitzvah of Pru Ravu, well, Pru Ravu is fulfilled when one has a son and a daughter. Now we know that Avram has a son, but that's why the Pasuk here tells us that he also had a daughter, as if to say he's organized and fulfilled the mitzvah of Pru Ravu, whereas Yitzchak has not. That's reason number one. And moreover, in terms of physical reasons that a person would want to be married, the Pasuk also says, or Chazal also comment when it says, Vashem Berachas Avram Bakol, Hashem gave Avram control over his Yetzirah, and therefore Avram is a lesser priority. But now the question is, if the choice is to find a wife for Yitzchak first, that's Tzav HaShaah, So why does Avram not go? We know why Yitzhak doesn't go. Avram specifically wants someone from Haran, but he does not want Yitzhak leaving Eretz Canaan, so Yitzhak can't go. Well, maybe Avram should go. No better judge than Avram. But to that, the pasuk says, "V'Avraham Zaken Baba Yamim," as if to say he's already he's 137, which even by those standards is already getting on. And the trip is not one that's going to be made by him. That's why it introduces by saying, "V'Avraham Zaken." Avram will not be the one. But the question is, well, then who is the one? I mean, who does he choose? He chooses Eliezer. One may question or ponder that choice. Is Eliezer the best choice in the sense that he's his servant? Is he the best judge? Is he? And moreover, the other side, interestingly, we always have to think of the other side, the mechutonim. How will they react if the servant turns up? If the help turns up? To find a wife. I mean, surely they're expecting at least the vice president. And that's why the pasuk also here introduces Eliezer with more details than it ever really has before, and tells us that he is avdo, which means he is faithful, and as we will see, it really is a tribute to Eliezer, his faithfulness. But he's the zakan beiso, he's the elder of Avram's household. That means that Eliezer is a very a capable person. Avram not only trusts his faithfulness, but trusts his judgment. He's a wise person already. And because he's the Kan Beiso and Moshel b'chol asher lo, he's in charge of the house, he already is someone of status, which means if you're the Eved of someone like Avram, you're already quite a chashuv person, and therefore there is no worry that he sends someone who is perhaps of a lesser profile than they might be expecting. An Eved of Avram is quite enough. And as we see, he made quite an impression. Even the Eved turns up with these 10 camels, with plenty of, bedecked with all sorts of things and valuables, and therefore everything is in place. All they need to do now is find the wife for Yitzchak. Avram gives his instructions to Eliezer, and Eliezer goes to Haran to find the one for Yitzchak. I would like to make reference to two classic comments which are made in this week's parsha by the Beis Halevi. He has only just a couple of things here. The first is with regards to the test itself, and Emet Hashem will expand more on the test and its implications quite soon, but the Beis Halevi has a very interesting comment. If we would ask the question, what is the goal of the test? As if to say, what is it testing? What qualities within the future bride of Yitzchak is it testing? I think the answer would probably be the trait of kindness, and there are many who take that approach. After all, she's prepared not only to respond to the request of this person who asked for water when he's seemingly capable of really getting water himself. And moreover, not only that, but then proceeds to offer to water all the camels as well. And camels drink a lot, which means it took a long, long time. So then that is outstanding. That is a stellar level within the act of kindness. And that seems to be the only thing that Eliezer is looking for. If she's that kind, she's the one. Nothing else seems to be of the essence or priority. But interestingly, the Beis Halevi sees within this test actually looking for two qualities. One, of course, is kindness and consideration, but the other is seichel. You see, it is actually, one could say, quite a leap to expect that she would say, not only will I give you to drink, but also I will give your camels to drink. Where is that coming from? So the Beis Halevi says to consider that his request to her is to hagmi'ini, now please let me drink from the jug. Okay, that's the request. Now if she complies, so then she's a kind person. She didn't say no, she didn't say get some yourself, but she allows him to drink from the jug of water. Very nice. Now, if she's smart, she will have a problem. She will realize that it's not a straightforward situation anymore, because a complete stranger has just drunk directly from her jug of water. And who knows what the implications are? Who knows what he's carrying, where he's been, and she doesn't know anything about him. And therefore, it's not responsible for her to then proceed to then just put the jug in again and take water home, because who knows what she's taking home? That would be wrong for us to do that. It would be irresponsible. But what's the alternative? To wash out the jug in front of him, I mean, that's offensive. That's insulting. So she's stuck, almost. I mean, how can she clean the jug of water without hurting his feelings? The answer is, there is a way. If she then offers to give the animals to drink, well, all agree that once the animals have drunk, so then one needs to wash the jug. Or the very act of drawing for so many animals, will dozens of times or whatever it is, will have the effect of cleaning out the jug. No one is offended, but no one gets hurt on the other side. And no one gets offended and no one gets infected. And that's the blend, that's the magic blend here. And moreover, what Eliezer is looking for is this something that you think about? It's smart, but if a person is both smart and caring, this will be the way forward. And that's why it's dafka the blend of chesed and seichel. That's the combination that he's looking for. She'll know to clean the jug, but in a way that he won't look like it was because of him. That's the first comment of Beis Halevi, and perhaps one could say it takes the Beis Halevi to see something like that, because Beis Halevi is kulo seichel as well as chesed. That's the truth, and that's the first comment. The second comment, says Beis Halevi, is it's interesting, and as we know, there's much to compare between the Torah's account of this episode and Eliezer's own retelling. And one point which Beis Halevi notes. Is that when Avram tells Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak, which is in Pasuk Dalet, he says, "Ki el arzi v'el maladati teleich, go to my land, go to my birthplace, v'lo kachta isha livni liYitzchak, and find a daughter for my son for Yitzchak," which actually is itself quite interesting because Eliezer knows quite well who Avram's son is. He did, so to say livni liYitzchak, when he's talking to Eliezer, who lives in the house, why would he not just say, we need to find a wife for Yitzchak? This is the time he needs to tell Eliezer that Yitzchak is his son. It's all the more interesting because when he retells the story and gets to this point, he says in Pasuk Lamed Ches, that my master said to me, "Im lo al beis avi teleich b'mishpachti," you have to go to my family, "v'lo kachta isha livni," and take a wife for my son. So interesting. That's already not an actual or verbatim repetition, because Avram said livni liYitzchak, and Eliezer says livni. Where did Yitzchak go? It's a good shaila. And the Beis Halevi answers with a mashal. And I wonder whether this is something that he'd actually experienced or witnessed. It's certainly something that could happen. And that is, there was someone, he was a shatran, and he approaches a gevir with a proposal for his daughter and says, "I know someone, and he's the son of a famous rav, and perfect match. Are you interested?" And he said, "Absolutely," and he offers a good amount of money for the dowry. So someone else who's there, who's also an aspiring shatran, and he feels that he'd like to intervene and maybe scoop here. Because he approaches the person when the other one leaves and says, "He's offered you someone who's the son of a great rav. I know someone who's in the process of becoming a great rav himself. I just heard 10,000 rubles. What do you think?" And the Kavir said, "Sorry, not interested." So this is quite some surprise, because if for the son of the Rav you're prepared to offer such a great amount of money, so for someone who's the Rav himself, all the more so. And the Kavir says, "What do you think I want my daughter to be? A rabbi's wife? The type of life she'll lead?" The first one said that he's the son of a rabbi. So the rabbi business has been taken care of already. All we now have is the kavod, is the yichus, and his son could be a businessman, so we can have the best of both worlds. And that's worth it for me. But he himself is a rav, with the type of life she'll lead. That's not for my daughter. Son of a rabbi, yes. A rabbi himself, forget about it. And that's the moshel of the Beis Halevi. But the interesting thing is, this is now the difference between Avram, who has, at least in this respect, quite a benevolent vision of the type of people that he'll be dealing with, and therefore he says, I want you to find a wife, Livni li Yitzhak. They'll have heard of me, okay, people have heard of Avram, but tell them, not only is he my son, he's Yitzhak, tell them about Yitzhak, tell them about his qualities, tell them how frum he is, tell them how holy he is, tell them what a tzaddik he is, and he's on his way to become the next big tzaddik. It sounds very good until Eliezer gets there and takes a look at Lavan and his family and realizes that if he mentions too much about Yitzchak, they'll run for the hills. And that's why he realizes that it will be more effective if he emphasizes that he's the son of Avram. And Avram's, they know Avram, and Avram already has the kavod, and the son of Avram could be whatever it may be. And that's why he omits the word Yitzchak in the sense of emphasizing what a tzaddik Yitzchak is, because their daughter for a rebbetzin is not necessarily what they have in mind. That's the second comment of Beis Halevi, each one really a gem. And from there, I'd like to proceed to look again at the test. And interestingly, we will not get too much involved in the halachic aspects, but there is a halacha that's associated with the test of Eliezer, one never would have imagined. But indeed, for the Gemara says, and this is in Maseches Chulin, Daf Tzadehem with Beis. And in fact, by way of preface, and we know the story quite well of Eliezer, and we'll get back to details quite soon, but there is another parallel episode in Tanakh that is worthwhile being aware of and having as for reference, and then we'll see the background to what the Gemara says. The episode in question is in Sefer Shmuel, in Perek Aleph, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yudalad. Now, what's happening there, we'll get to the aspect that's relevant to us, is that the Jewish people, they are poised for war against the Plishtim, and the one camp is here, and the one camp is here, and there's just like that lull before battle commences. And Yehonah's son, that is Shaul's son, he takes his armor bearer, and he decides to take the initiative somewhat, and seem perhaps he can do an advanced strike on the Philistine camp. But he says, you know, I'd like a sign before we proceed. And the sign is like this. We'll read just a couple of psukim. Vayomer Yehonasan, this is in Pasuk Ches of Shmuel Aleph Perik Yudalet. Vayomer Yehonasan, hine anachnu avrim el ha'anashim. Let's go towards the enemy camp, towards the Plishtim. Viniglinu alehem, and show ourselves to them. Let them see us. And we'll see how they react. We'll see what they say. Imko yomu eleinu. If they say to us, domu ad hagi'enu aleichem, stay there until we come and get you. They will come and attack you. Says Yonasan, if that's what they say, then v'amadnu tachteinu. Then we should stay where we are. And in fact, we should probably disappear at that time. V'lo na'ale aleichem. We're not going to attack. V'imko yomu. But what if they say, alu aleinu, come on us. The Alinu, then we'll proceed. Kinesanan Hashem biyadenu bezelonu haos. Because if they say that, that means that is a sign that Hashem has delivered them into our hands. We're only two people, but that's a sign to proceed. And as the pasuk continues, that's exactly what happened. And they showed themselves, and the Plishtim saw them, and they said, Alu aleinu. They really said what the Yonasan would say. They said, Alu aleinu, v'nodia eschem davar, and we'll let you know what's what. And Yonasan says, let's go. Alei acharai, after me. Ki nesanan Hashem b'yad Yisrael. Hashem has delivered them in the hand of Israel. And as the pasuk continues to describe, they entered the camp, and they killed a good few, and the panic that ensued, but the whole camp was in absolute mayhem. That is the episode with Yonasan. The question is, how does this relate to us? The Gemara states in Chulin Daf Tzadik Hei Omid Beis, with reference to something called Nichush, And what is nichush? Nichush, divining, looking for signs. And the Torah says, lo tenachashu. It's a lo sase. One shouldn't really do that. What are the classic signs? That is to say, that a person determines his behavior based on certain omens and signs. The Gemara says, if he's eating food and his bread falls from his hand, he says, well, okay, so I'm not going to go ahead with that venture. Or if a deer crosses his path, or we would say a black cat crosses his path, so then he turns back. That sort of thing. That's nichush. And the Gemara makes a somewhat terse and enigmatic statement that we need to unravel. And that is, says Gemara, kol nichush. Any act of, you know what is characterized as nichush? You know what are classic examples of nichush? What Eliezer did and what Yonasan did. That's nichush. And if it's not like them, it's not nichush. Kol nichush she'enu ke'Eliezer ben Eved Avram ve'Yonasan ben Shaul. Einu nichush. Those are the classic examples of what nichush is. Now, of course, we have a problem because the Gemara seems to be saying that Eliezer and Yehonasan, what they did was called nichush. Nichush is forbidden by the Torah. It's clearly a problem for Yehonasan, who is post-Matan Torah and Jewish. It is possibly a problem also for Eliezer, because even though Eliezer wasn't Jewish, he's a Ben Noach, but there are opinions that Nichush is actually forbidden even for a Ben Noach, and for what he was punctilious in his observance of mitzvahs. So we're stuck here. Why? Because it's inconceivable that Eliezer, Yonasan for sure, and possibly Eliezer, actually violated the Isser of Nichush, but their acts are held up as the almost standard bearers and typical examples of what Nichush is. So how can they be examples of Nichush without actually being Nichush? That is the question. And interestingly, you may not be surprised to hear, there are two answers to this question. The reason why there are two answers is because, and they agree in principle, both of these approaches that we will see now, that an act of nichush has two characteristics to it. Yonatan Eliezer only had one characteristic, and it's with reference to that characteristic that the Gemara says it's got to be like that to be nichush. But they didn't have both characteristics, that would actually be nichush. They had one of the two, and it's with reference to that one that the Torah, that the Gemara says that type of thing is nichush. We'll begin with Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran. But the Ran says that the two, well, what all agree, the two characteristics are, number one, the sign that one bases one's behavior on, it needs to be unreasonable. That's important. Many people base their behavior on certain signs. But if the sign is reasonable, you should. If a person says, if it looks like it will rain, I will take an umbrella to work, he is relying on a sign. The sign is the clouds. That makes perfect sense. Clouds mean rain. Rain needs an umbrella. If a person says, if stocks go down, I will buy. And if they look like they rise, then I'll sell. That's a sign. But if he has good business sense, it's a good sign. I mean, and it makes sense, if you can make sense of it. And therefore, that's not nichush. Everyone does that. And it's called being sensible. Which means that the type of the traction or connection between the sign and your behavior needs to be zero, unreasonable. Then that's grounds for nichush. That's number one. The second characteristic, say we shown him, is that one's reliance on that is total, as if to say, as soon as he sees that act, he makes up his mind and he doesn't consider anything else. So the two factors again are, one, the sign is unreasonable, that it should indicate one course or the other, and number two, his decision is entirely based on that sign. If one of those should be missing, then it's not nichush. But if one of is present, one can still see what the type of characteristic looks like. And therefore, says the Ran, to business. When the Gemara says that for nichush to be nichush, it needs to be like what Eliezer did, and like what Yonasan did, it's referring specifically to their reliance on that sign, as if to, which is that it's the second aspect. If you rely on Nichush the way they relied on their signs, that's what we're talking about. Because isn't it true? Don't we see that as soon as Eliezer saw that Rivka had passed the test, he already gave her jewelry? It means, as far as he's concerned, this is it. It's been decided. All that's happened is she's passed the test, and he relies on it completely. That reliance is what we mean when we say Nichush has to be like that, full reliance. However, says the Ran, it wasn't Nichush because the sign is perfect for reasons that we began to discuss earlier. It's not a random sign. If she offers if she accepts to give him to drink and then offers to feed his camels, Well, that's a person who is outstanding in the quality of chesed. She is the person for Yitzhak. I mean, that actually makes perfect sense. So in terms of the connection between the sign and his decision, it's a reasonable line. That's why it's not Nichush. It's only with reference to his reliance on the sign that the Gemara is referring as Nichush. And Kayotze Badavar, similarly, says the Ran. In the case of Yonasan, it seems to be maybe a random thing if they say we'll come to you, if they say you come to us, but it isn't a random sign. It's indicative of their morale. It's indicative of their courage. Are they prepared to venture beyond the safety of their camp? And if they are, that means we probably shouldn't start with them. And that is perfectly reasonable. But if they say come to us, that means that they're afraid themselves to go out. If they're afraid, they're vulnerable. That's perfectly reasonable. And therefore, says the Ran, that's why Yehonasan wasn't Nichush, because he wasn't relying on an unreasonable sign. It was reasonable. He relied on it completely, and that, again, is the point. Full reliance like that, on if it were to be unreasonable, that is called Nichush. So this is the approach of the Ran. Again, two things need to be present for there to be a violation. Unreasonable sign and full reliance. In these cases, the sign was reasonable. The only factor was full reliance, and that's what the Gemara is focusing on. Well, that's the Ran. Tosfos say exactly the same, except the opposite. As if to say they concur with the principle, with the framework, that there are two characteristics, and they only had one. But which is the one that they had? Tosfos understand that actually the signs in both cases were unreasonable. That means in the case of Yonasan, it wasn't enough to go on. Come here, you'll go there. It's not enough to go on. And Tosfos also, and they do not elaborate on this, but even Rivka agreeing to give the camels a drink, not enough. And that type of sign is actually a Nichush type sign. So if that's a Nichush-type sign, then why was Eliezer and Yonasan not in violation of Nichush? Because, says Tosfos, neither of them relied on it completely. And that means that Yonasan had other reasons for which Tosfos again does not elaborate as to why he proceeded. And with regards to Eliezer, although it seems that he relied on the sign completely, because isn't it true that he then proceeded to give her the jewelry straight away? Doesn't that seem like full reliance? And I'm telling you, there was not full reliance. Says Tosfos, a chiddush, invoking the principle of Ein Mukdam Umeuchar Batorah. That means, which as we know what it means, that the order in which things are stated in the Torah does not always reflect the chronological order. Now, the reason why this is a chiddush, I mean, Tosfos are capable of saying a chiddush, but the reason why it is a chiddush is because generally, when we discuss the idea of a mukdam u'mu'ucha b'Torah, that's with regards to episodes or sections of the Torah. But here, we're talking about the details within one episode. And the first pasuk says, he gave her the jewelry, and the next pasuk says he asked her who she was, and yet Tosfos invoke the concept of Ein Mukdam Umeuchar Batorah as if to say that in reality he asked her who she was first, and then when she said she's Rivka, that's when he gave her the jewelry. Now that's quite a thing to assert, but the truth is that Tosfos says you can demonstrate that it's true. We can demonstrate that the real order was that he first asked her and then gave her the jewelry. How can we know that? Says Tosfos, because look at what happens as he retells the story. That's the order that he says it. He says first he asked who she was, and she's Rivka, and then he gave. And therefore, says Tosfos, you can see the real order there. the reason why that is a chiddush is because of the two choices, shall we say, of which is the correct order, of which is the actual chronological order, either the order in which the Torah describes it as happening, or the order in which Eliezer describes it as happening. Tosfos give more primacy to Eliezer's description, where he says he asked first and then gave, and that actually leads us back to the Torah saying he gave the jewelry first and then asked, and rearranged the psukim to say in mukdam u'mo'achar b'Torah. That's quite a chiddush. But that is the approach of Tosus. So to summarize, Tosus's approach of the two elements that need to be in Nichush, the element that was there was the unreasonable nature of the sign. It wasn't Nichush because neither of them relied on it fully, and therefore they were in the clear. But if a person were to have a sign unreasonable like that, and yes, to rely on that sign fully, that's what the Gemara says is Nichush. So these are the two classic responses in the Rishonim, and it seems that they've covered the matter entirely. Until the Meshech Chochma comes along, a few hundred years later, and he has an explanation which is really stunning. From a certain point of view, it's a middle ground between the two. And he begins by drawing our attention to two important points. And in this, he's actually quite similar to the Malbim. Firstly, when we look at Eliezer's retelling of the story, and formally it is just, quote-unquote, a retelling for their purposes, but the Torah gives us the whole repetition, he changes a couple of things, quite significant things. Firstly, the question as to where he is meant to go in order to find a wife for Yitzchak. If we look at the Pasuk, that is Perek Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, where Avram originally tells him where to go. It states, Ki el artzi ve'el maladati telech. I would like you to go to my land and to my birthplace. Those are the words that are given to Eliezer. But once again, in Pasuk Lamed Ches, as Eliezer retells that part of the story, he says that my master said to me, Imlo el beis avi telech ve'el mishpachti. You've got to go to my father's house, you have to go to my family. Now, certainly in terms of linear translation, the Torah doesn't say that Avram said that. Avram said, my land and my birthplace. Eliezer said that Avram said, my father's house and my family. Okay. What's behind that change? And secondly, as we have already noted, Eliezer inverts the order of what it was that he did first, as if to say, the Torah says that he gave her the jewelry first and then asked her name. But he says that he asked her name first and then gave her the jewelry. What is behind these differences? Says Meshech Chochma. We are perhaps wont to understand that when Avram said to Eliezer, I want you to go to Haran, that he had his family specifically in mind. But the truth is that Avram never mentions his family. And really what that means is that Avram, he rates the people of Haran higher than he rates the people of Canaan. Under no circumstances can you take from anyone in Canaan. There's better people in Haran. That's where you'll find a wife for Yitzhak. Who specifically? No one specifically. But she'll come from Haran. That's where the quality people are, everything being relative. And that's why Avram actually has no insistence that Eliezer take a wife from his family. He just needs to find someone of quality from Haran. And moreover, that is why when Eliezer arrives in Haran, he goes to the well to find a wife for Yitzhak. If he was all the while going to find someone from Avram's house specifically, so he should go to Avram's house, or that is to say Avram's family's house, exactly like Yaakov did. Yaakov knew where he was going. So when he stops up to the well, it's not to conduct a test. He stops up at the well to say, do you know Lavan, and where is he? So Eliezer should have done the same thing. So what's with the water, and what's with the camels, and what's with the jug? And that seems to be a complete diversion. He should go straight to Avram's family's house. But the point is, Avram's family were never an integral part of the equation. He just needs to find a fine person, a kind and good quality person. And in fact, that's all he needs to test for. That's all he needs to discover. And the best place to do that is at the well, because whoever responds in that way, by definition, she's the one, and it almost doesn't matter what her name is. I mean, she has to have a name. I mean, they'll be printing invitations, so I mean, she'll need a name and an address, but it doesn't matter where she's from. That was the original plan. It is non-specific to Avram's family. And that being the case, says Meshech Chochma, so now everything got turned around when Eliezer found out that she's actually from Avram's family. He did not anticipate that. And moreover, it's for that reason that he gave her the jewelry before asking her name, because she's already passed. He tells her name as a matter of formality. But when she tells him who she is, so everything gets now spun around, because he is now dealing with Avram's family. Now Eliezer is dedicated, and this is in his praise, he is dedicated to having this work for Avram. And therefore he sees this as an opportunity as he then proceeds to Avram's family to then add an element. In other words, he can take the idea of the well, everything that happened there, and add it as a further element. As if to say, one thing he will have to change, one thing he does change, and that is, as he retells the story, he tells it as if it was always meant to be coming to them. And that's why he requotes Avram's words, that whereas Avram said, Artsi omaladati, my land, and it doesn't matter who, but he says, no, Avram from the outset says, I want you to go to my family. And that's why he then repeats that as Beisavi and Mishpachti. Interestingly, the word moladati does have a family connotation, and therefore perhaps, as Meshech Chochma says, Eliezer saw that that's where he has license to make it into a family matter, even though it wasn't officially one at all. And therefore, Eliezer is saying, I was told to take a wife from my master's family, and I did, but you know what I did first? I stopped off at the well. And I stopped off at the well because I was looking for a sign. And the sign is, now, it's always going to be from Avram's family, but in addition to that, I want her to pass this test, and then she should also be from Avram's family. But the chances of that happening are very slim. The one that he asks and passes the test, she'll definitely be from Avram's family. That's not a necessary connection. But he says, but you know what? But I did it anyway, for good omen, for a good sign. That's how he retells the story of the test. Initially, the test was the only thing he needed to do, and that was actually the criteria and perfectly reasonable. In retelling the story, he turned it into something unreasonable, because it's not reasonable to expect that the one who comes out and says yes and says it is also going to be from Avram's family. But he does that in order to let them know just how blessed the union is. That's why he also then needs to change another detail, and that is when she ended up being Rivka, but he says that he asked who she was first. He'll have to say that, because if in his retelling she always has to be from Avram's family, because that's what his master told him, so he has to check that she's from Avram's family before giving her the jewelry, and that's why he reverses the order. And that's what's behind those changes. However, says Meshech Chochma, where does this leave us? It means that when the Gemara says that anything that's not like the Nichush of Eliezer isn't Nichush, it's actually referring to the unreasonable aspect of it. Eliezer didn't do Nichush because in his vision, he wasn't looking for Avram's family. It's perfectly reasonable that all she needs to do is to be kind. But in the retelling, And as he portrays what he did, his portrayal is actually one of Nichush, because to demand that the one who passes the test is also Avram, there's no natural connection anymore. And that, says the Gemara, would be grounds for Nichush. So what's amazing is Eliezer is an example, not in terms of what he did, but what in terms of what he said he did. That's how you reconcile his kosher behavior, not offside of Nichush, with being an example for Nichush. So that's classic Meshech Chochma coming in when the Rishonim seemingly have said all there is to say, and to give his understanding of how exactly that worked. Now, I'd like to move from here to discuss again a general question that goes through the Parsha. And that is, Eliezer, as we may know, he's the star, so to speak, of the Parsha. I mean, he's the main personality. He is not mentioned by name once in the entire Parsha. He is instead given two appellations. Sometimes he'll be called Eved, and sometimes he'll be called Ish. That's it. He's either Eved or Ish. And specifically, if we see the breakdown, and all of this is in Perek Kavdalet, as we said, the way it works is that from the beginning of the Perek, pretty much until Pasuk Kaf Aleph of the Perek, he is called the Eved, which means from the outset, as Avram calls him in Pasuk Beis, Vayoma Avraham El Avdo, Zekam Beiso. Right, he's the Eved, and as he gets going in Pasuk Yud, Vayikacha Eved, Asara Gmalim, he takes those 10 camels, and off he goes, and so on and so forth. Until we get to even Pasuk Yud Zayin, right? Vayaratz ha'eved likrasar, right? The servant, he runs towards Rivka and asks, and eved until that point. Then in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, things change, and the pasuk states Veho ish mishta'ela. He is just stunned, and he's just waiting to see what will happen. He's expectant, etc. But he's called the ish. And that is then something that persists and keeps going, and is the ish pretty much until Pasuk Nun Beis, which means as long as he's retelling the story, he's called the ish, he's the ish ala gmalim, he's the ish ala ayin, he's the ish by the be'er, and that's that. But then interestingly, in Pasuk Nun Beis, he goes back. And it states by Yi Kasher Shab. They say Mi Hashem Yatzah Davar, right? In Pasuk Nun, they think it's amazing. Lavan and Besuel, soon to be just Lavan, think it's amazing, and it's all good, and it's all been sorted out. In Pasuk Nun Beis, by Yi Kasher Shama Eved Abraham is Divrehem, by Yishtachu Arzul Hashem, by Yotzei Ha Eved. And therefore, it is really as you track the Psukim, we see that he's never called by name, he's only called one of two things, but it seems to fluctuate. And he starts being referred to as an Eved, and then he is referred to as an Ish, and then once again he's referred to as an Eved. And the question is, what's it all about? Why is he called one at a certain time, and why something else at another time? And this question is discussed by a number of Mefarshim, but the one that we will be guided by here is Rabbeinu Bachya. And Rabbeinu Bachya says that actually, I mean, he is an Eved, I mean, which means that that's the default, shall we say. But the key here is something that Avram says to him. And it's something that we can read it, and they're not really paid much attention to it, because with, and that is in when he says, perhaps she won't want to come with me. Should I take Yitzhak back there? Hashem says, Avram says, under no circumstances. But what he does say is, in Pasuk Zion, and this is in response to Eliezer's question, should I send Yitzhak back? No. Under no circumstances. Pasuk Zayin. Hashem Elokei Hashamayim. Asher lekachani mibeis avi u'me'eretz melalati v'asher dibali v'asher nishbali le'mor lezarecha etin es aretz azoz. Hashem has done all of those things for me. Hu yishlach malacho lefanecha. He will send his malach before you. V'lakachta isha levni misham. So that's very interesting because, you know, carefully, but we need to ask, there's someone else in the equation here. And that is, Hashem is sending a malach before Eliezer. But the question is, what does that mean? And what form does it take? And where do we see him? Says Rabbeinu Bachya, the arrangement and alignment and success of the whole episode is basically the work of the Malach. As if to say, here's Eliezer, and he's saying, I have this idea for this test. And then who appears right then is Rivka. And then and she's the first one he sees, and all that orchestration, that's what Avraham means. Hashem will help you. He'll send a Malach to organize things for you. You have to do your part. But it will come together through this malach, which means that where do we see the malach in the equation? Where do we see the malach in the episode? In the episode, as everything works out exactly as it should, that's the doing of the malach sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, Rabbeinu Bachya says the word ish in the Torah, certainly undefined, is a reference also to a malach. Similarly, we find in the Navi, we see it often, right? The ish is the ish levushabatim, and ish Daniel talks about the ish, right? It's always a malach. The malach that communicates with a person is called an ish for that reason, because he talks to ishim, he talks to people, communicates with people. Later on in Parshas Vayeshev, when Yosef is lost in the field, Vayimzeu ish, right? Someone finds him. Rashi says that's the malach Gavriel, Vayimalah ish levushabatim. And therefore, Eliezer himself is an Eved, but he will be called an Ish because he is an Eved working in conjunction with the Malach. That's what he's referred to as an Ish. Now the question is, when does that happen? Because as we know, he's referred to for quite a while just as an Eved, and only at a certain point. So here Rabbeinu Bachya says a Chiddush, and that is the point that he himself is now called an Ish. And we understand now that when the Torah calls him an Ish, that means that it is him working in conjunction with the Ish, right, with the Malach that Hashem has sent for him. The point that he then becomes called the Ish, referring to that combination, is the point where it is clear to him Hashem's role in sending the Malach, in working things out. As if to say, initially, he's traveling, and he's thinking, and he's davening, and he's proposing a test, as long as that's happening, he hasn't yet seen confirmation. He hasn't yet seen things unfold in front of him in the way that he hopes they will. He's just setting things up, and therefore he doesn't yet really see the role of the Malach in helping him in any way. All of that changes at the transitional point of Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Because in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, that is when things begin to work out spectacularly well. That means he's arranged his test, and it seems to be being fulfilled, and it is not an easy test. And moreover, I'm not entirely sure how many people he could meaningfully have asked to give him a jug of water. I don't know how much he can drink. I don't know how many other people are going to just give him another, more and more to drink. Which means that, from a certain point of view, it almost has to be the first one, if not near the first. And it is, and she's responding exactly the way he hoped. And therefore, at this point, it becomes crystal clear to him that his path is being guided. And that's what Avraham said to him from the beginning. Hu yishlach malacho lefanecha, Hashem will send a malach, and he'll help you. And therefore, when the Malach's role is manifestly clear to Eliezer, that's the point that as he continues there, he is referred to as the Ish. That is to say, with full cognizance and full awareness of the Malach that is helping him as well. He's called an Ish. Why is this a Chiddush? It's a Chiddush because we see that the transition of Eved to Ish, and as we've mentioned many times in the past, the more there is a correlation and a correspondence between the extent to which something is mentioned explicitly in the pasuk and the extent to which it is manifest in the situation. The more apparent it is in the situation the pasuk is describing, the more apparent it will be in the pasuk that describes it. And that's why we have the levels of pshat and drash and remez. The pshat in the pasuk, one could almost say, represents the pshat, parallels the pshat in the situation. What you see, what meets the eye in the pasuk, reflects what met the eye in the situation. Now there's deeper things going on in that situation, and there's deeper messages in the pasuk, and that's the correspondence. So the more apparent something is in reality, the more apparent it will be in the pasuk. Here, what's interesting is the malach was with Eliezer the whole time, but he didn't see it, and he didn't realize it until a certain point. And it's the point of his realization that is the transition in the pasuk of referring to from Eved to Ish. That's a chiddush. As if to say, here, the shift or the explicit reference of Ish in the pasuk is not when it actually happens, but when Eliezer realizes that it's happening. And that means because it's become apparent to him, and then it becomes apparent to us in the pasuk. So he goes from Eved to Ish, but as we mentioned, at a certain point, he goes back. He goes back to being an Eved. Why would he go back to being an Eved? Says Rabbeinu Bachya. Well, let's look at the point that he does go back to being referred to as an Eved. It's in Pasuk Nun Beis. And what has happened? Basically, everything has worked out. In other words, we are just off to the point, as we said, where Lavan, retells the story, and they're very taken by it, right? They're And they agree. And they say words which they probably never said before or after. Me Hashem yatsa davar. When they're overwhelmed by just everything that he said. And they said, here's Rivka, and it should be with a Gutasha, and which means his mission has been completed, essentially. And once his mission has been completed, that's the point at which the Malach is no longer necessary, and therefore he reverts once again to being the Eved. That's what's behind the shift first from Eved to Ish, as he sees the Malach working, and when he no longer needs the Malach, so then he goes back to being an Eved. That's the general trend, shall we say. Interestingly, there is an exception, which Rabbeinu Bachya, in the interest of thoroughness and attention to all detail, raises. And that is in Pasuk Nun Ches. Because Pasuk Nun Ches, as far as we're concerned, from Pasuk Nun Beis and onwards, he's the Eved again. Okay. What does Pasuk Nun Ches say? Vayikru'u l'Rivka, because actually they started making trouble the day after. Maybe we're not sure, maybe she should stay, and once she stays, she'll never leave. So she'll stay for a little bit. Eliezer says, you know what, let's ask her. He says, please don't delay me, and they say, you know, let's ask her. I'm not sure what they were expecting her to say. Maybe they got a bit of a surprise, because she said she's going. But Pasuk Nun Ches says, "Vayikru l'Rivka, vayom reileh." They called Rivka and they said, "Hatelchi im ish hazeh? Will you go with this ish?" And she said, "Yes, eileich." I guess their facial cues were not as pronounced as perhaps they would have liked them to be, or maybe they were, and Rivka doesn't care. But she said yes, and Rashi says, she says, "Even if you disagree, I'm going." But what's interesting is he's referred to again as the Ish, but I thought we'd pass that point. In other words, what's done is done. They're causing trouble again, but why is he the Ish? Says Rabbeinu Bachya very simply, because this case is different than all the other cases. All the other cases, it's the Torah talking. The Torah is describing Eliezer. The Torah can choose to refer to him either as an Eved or an Ish. In this instance, it's not the Torah talking. It's Rivka's family talking, and they're talking to Rivka about Eliezer in his presence. It's not they're a covered to say to a person, if you can say, will you go with this servant? And he's the said servant is right in front of you. Or to say, will you go with this gentleman? So, with this person, with this... So, and therefore, says Rabbeinu Bachya, and this itself is a further yisod, which we've discussed on numerous occasions, one of Rav Kupperman's famous discussions. When the Torah quotes people speaking, often there's different rules because the Torah has its way of speaking and it says what needs to be said in the way that Hashem judges the Torah should speak. But when it quotes people, of course it's the Torah quoting them, but it's faithful to what they would have said if they wouldn't call him an Eved to his face, rather they call him an Ish. So the Torah quotes them and calls them an Ish, even though formally he's already an Eved, back again at that stage. Rav Kupperman himself has a very interesting suggestion, just as one's like to accompany Rabbeinu Bachya. Again, if our question is, if he's already back again in Eved, why are they calling him an Ish? Rabbeinu Bachya says, covered. Says Rav Kupperman, maybe. But maybe lack of covered. As if to say, and it is an interesting point, he says he's Eved Avraham. That's nice. Let's say we all believe him. But no one knows. In other words, it could be that they loaded the question and phrased it in a way that perhaps was engendered in as polite a way as possible to sow doubt in Rivka's eyes, as if to say, will you go with this Eved, is already referring he is the servant of Avram, and that's the whole connection. But they call him an Ish, perhaps to suggest or to intimate that maybe he's just a person. And we don't know that he's an Eved. It's very nice. He's an Eved. He's quite a well-to-do Eved. Okay, also very nice. But maybe he's just a person. And therefore maybe this whole thing is fabricated. You sure you want to go with this person? Stam-ish? That's his suggestion as to why they're looking perhaps to take the wind out of Rivka's sails. He's an Ish at the end of the day. Who knows? Eved? Maybe. Maybe not. Don't know. Okay. The final question, which we can leave as homework, is in Pasuk Samach Aleph. It is the, and why is it so interesting? Because here it has both titles in one Pasuk. Rivka says she's going, they give her the bracha and she's going, they can't stop her. Samach Aleph, Vatakam Rivka Vanaroseha, Vatirkavna Ala Gmalim. So Rivka and her girls, so they ride on the camels, Vatelachna Achreha Ish. Okay, he's an Ish again. Vayikacha Eved is Rivka Vayelach. So in one pasuk, and it's the final segments here, he's called both an Ish and an Eved. Rabbeinu Bachya raises the question and says, again, he should be just an Eved now because he's just taking her home. Perhaps he's called an Ish when initially to give cover to Rivka. Those are Rabbeinu Bachya's words, to give cover to Rivka, as if to say that almost like his status was enhanced when Rivka was kind of coming back with him. But we would still need to understand why he's called an Ish, and then literally two words later called an Eved. That, of course, is food for thought. But as we've seen, there's really Yesodus and Parshanut that come out here. Specifically, as we said, the correlation between a person's awareness of something and the extent to which it's mefurish in the Torah is almost like the extent to which it's mefurish in his consciousness. That's the first thing. And secondly, to always keep an eye on things that the Torah says and things that the Torah said that people said. People are not always as truthful as the Torah, which means, and that they're not always speak in the way that the Torah itself would speak. But the Torah quotes them, because we need to know exactly what they said and the way that they said it. We'll leave it over there for a second.